Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now on the Meyer Supercenter guest line, covering the Miami Hurricanes, the play-by-play voice of the Hurricanes. His name is Joe Zagacki. You can find him on Twitter, at Canes Voice. Joe, my friend, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you? How's life? How are things now that we finally are a couple weeks into the season? It kind of feels like normal again.
Yeah, sure it does. Things are great. We're here in sunny South Florida, expecting a very warm afternoon for Miami and Michigan State, and it's great to have college football back. It's even better. Last week was our first home game. It was even better to be able to walk through the parking lot and see all the fans tailgating. Miami is famous for their tailgate, so they were all fired up last week.
Yeah, it's great to have fans back in the stands and to be playing college football in the pageantry. I think that we've seen that excitement kind of carry over in the first 2 weeks, that people are just happy to be back at their home venues. This is a really interesting game here between the 24th-ranked Miami Hurricanes and unranked Michigan State, but a Spartans team that is, you know, starting to catch some eyes of some people, you know, across the country, and especially here locally. There's a lot of good buzz around East Lansing right now. As we look at game one for the Hurricanes, Alabama is always going to be a tough test for anybody who ends up on their schedule. Some people think that they might lose a couple of times this year. I'm like, oh, I'll believe it when I see it, Joe. But that first game against Alabama, 44-13, not necessarily a score that we would expect from a Miami team that's coming in ranked, but sometimes, like, as a Michigan fan myself, sometimes I feel like that Miami brand, the Michigan brand, the Texas brand, sometimes that brand power is actually stronger than what's the product on the field.
Yeah, there's no question about that. You know, people keep wondering, is Miami back? And they hear about Miami. And Miami, the glory days of Miami are long gone. They're 20 years old. And I think college football is better when the University of Miami is more relevant. But just like Michigan, or just like Texas, or just like Southern Cal, or like Florida State, Miami's been faced with several dilemmas over the last 20 years. One of those is the team you mentioned, Alabama. Now, people don't realize, unless you really look at Alabama, what Nick Saban has done. He comes into every state. He went into Michigan. He got the number one player out of the state of Michigan. We saw him play against Alabama, defensive tackle. He has the numbers 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9 players out of Texas. And, of course, he has raided Florida of its top players. So that's been a problem. The game against Alabama, I think, was disappointing for Miami. I thought going in, the whole theme had to be for Miami, stay close, stay attached, both down in distance and on the scoreboard, and they just were not able to do that. Alabama overwhelmed them in every way imaginable. So they moved on to last week's game against Appalachian State. Appalachian State, a couple of years ago, took Penn State to overtime. Miami had the ball 8 times inside the 40-yard line and squandered most of those opportunities. And as a result, they were hanging on, much like that cat was hanging on from the upper deck.
Very much. The cat, I couldn't believe that video when I saw it. First off, I'm wondering, why is the cat there? Did somebody bring that? Did that cat have a ticket? And it was hanging on. But good on all the good folks down there at Hard Rock to be able to find a flag, of all things, to be able to catch that cat. And I guess it allegedly survived. I haven't heard any updates, but I was shocked when I saw the video. I am right with you, Joe. And I don't know, maybe it's because I reminisce over my childhood, but if Miami and Florida State are very good, you mentioned USC, Notre Dame's kind of lingering right now. Michigan's cracked back into the top 25. Texas, Oklahoma. Like, I like it more when more of these traditional powers are better. And if they have to build a wall around Florida to keep those kids in the state of Florida away from Alabama, where do I sign that petition? Because I will do it to keep that talent at home for Miami and for Florida State and for Florida's benefit. App State's a team that we know a lot about here in Michigan. I have a Wolverine helmet on my desk right now, Joe. I hate seeing App State on the television. I saw them against Miami and I said, don't do this, Miami. Don't do this right now. But my question for you would be at quarterback, in how De'Aaron King is recovering from an ACL that was really the story of the offseason. How has he looked thus far?
You know, I think it's been a mixed bag. I think he's looked really good in practice. I think it's an amazing story that he has been able to come back 8 months after having surgery on his ACL. He leads the ACC in total offense. He leads the ACC in total offensive plays, 91 after 2 games. So he's out there. He's competing. I think he's playing at a high level. I don't think his decision-making has been at an A-plus level. You know, Miami depends on him to make great decisions on the RPOs. I think perhaps there have been occasions where he has been able to, where he has just handed the ball off, and maybe it called for a quarterback run, or maybe it called for throwing a pass in the flat, and instead he has opted for the straight handoff, and I think that has been a little bit too predictable, and perhaps maybe it was the second or third play against Alabama, one of his first dropbacks, where he got bent in half. Maybe that put a negative thought in his mind. I don't know. Maybe he's been a little bit hesitant because of the knee. So on one hand, he's playing at a high level in terms of the amount of plays. His production has been good. I just think that if his decision-making was a little bit better, Miami's offense would be operating at a much better level.
You know, it's interesting from the offensive side of the football here with Manny Diaz trying to, you know, basically, you know, recreate Miami's offense in 2019, which was Diaz's first year as the head coach. He took Dan Enos away from Alabama, and that was his first offensive coordinator choice. That didn't work out. The Canes finished 2019 ranked 90th in the nation in scoring offense, 98 in yards per game, and then 80th in yards per play. So Manny Diaz goes ahead and lets Enos go, and then he brings in Rhett Lashley, and that ditches kind of that commitment to like a Miami pro-style sort of offense to more of like an up-tempo, like a faster spread speed attack where the Canes jumped up the ladder in scoring and yards per game and yards per play. When you kind of look back at the difference between 2019 to 2020, then to this year, are you seeing that, I guess, maybe positive effect from Lashley on this offense? You're seeing that start to kind of carry over because sometimes when you change coordinators, that system can take time to implement.
Well, it is taking time, but the answer is yes. By the way, sidebar is Dan Enos played in the game last time when he played Michigan State. They sacked him at the end of the game. Cortez Kennedy recovered a fumble. But to answer your question, I think one of the reasons, going back almost to your first question about being relevant in Alabama, one of the things that has held Miami back, I think, has been their stubbornness up until last year to spread the field. And maybe like Michigan or Michigan State, fans always want to say, well, Miami has to look a certain way. You know, the Miami offense has to look like the Miami offense of 2001. Well, the entire country is running a spread formation up-tempo. And if you were to watch high school football down here, which is an incredible sight to behold, or even get into the Optimist Leagues and the Pee Wee Leagues, everybody is running a spread offense, and every kid wants to be a wide receiver, running back, or tight end. So Miami is surrounded by tons of talent, tons of high school kids that are running a spread offense, yet the main team in this area was not running it until Rhett Lashley came in. So I do think it's going to take some time. I don't think a lot of people have patience here, but they should, because I think this is the right move, and I think as it continues to unfold, it's going to benefit Miami. I thought it was very effective last year. Off to a little bit of a slow start this year. They depend on big plays, and so far their most explosive play is a 36-yard pass and a 29-yard run. And if Miami is to beat Michigan State on Saturday, for Miami, that has to change. They cannot slug it out all the way down the field with Michigan State. They've got to find a way to get some home runs or layups, some easy scores into their offense.
You know, Joe, and I don't know, I mean, I assume that we did pass each other in a press box one time, just a couple of years ago when Miami came up to Toledo, because I worked there at the University of Toledo. So Miami was playing Toledo, and in the following there, in the tailgate, it was an incredible scene just to walk around the parking lot, making your way, you know, up to the Glass Bowl Stadium. And I wanted to ask, because this doesn't have anything to do with this particular game, but where does Miami Hurricanes football kind of fall in the general landscape that is Miami sports? You know, a lot of times if you're in LA, if you're in Miami, what do you have? You have sun, you have sand, you have beach, you have nightclubs. You got a lot of things that you could be doing. Where at, you know, here in Michigan, you know, our sports season, we kind of revolve around that, maybe differently than some other areas of the country. So where do the Canes kind of fall when it comes to the Finns or the Heat? I guess maybe we could even throw like maybe the Florida Panthers in there as well, or the soccer club.
Well, you can throw them all in there, and it's a great question. And I also think it's one that's very much understood. Because I think people around the country sometimes think, oh, Miami fans are apathetic. No, they're not apathetic. They're really passionate. You have to understand, that, and you know, it's one of the great debates down here, because we do live in the past, and we do expect Miami, or the fans do expect championships every year. They expect high level football, and so when they don't see it, then they're not apathetic, but they're not going to spend their money on it. Where does the University of Miami land? They are probably 1A, right behind the Dolphins. And some might find that hard to believe. But when the University of Miami is winning, there is nothing like it in South Florida. When the University of Miami is winning, this area is on fire. And even maybe even more so than the Dolphins, because you know, the college game just brings that passion, the bravado. Miami kind of is a bit of a bully community, or it can be at times. And if you go to a University of Miami game when they're playing really well, it's probably a cross of a English Premier Soccer League game and an old Oakland Raiders game. It's, you know, you're entering the Bermuda Triangle and the Twilight Zone. So to answer your question, it's way up there. And we saw it in 2017 when Miami won 10 games. They had a run there 3 straight weeks. It was Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, and Virginia, and they had 65,000 passionate fans in that stadium each time. And it hit me then, you know, you can't serve a fan base peanut butter and jelly that was served filet mignon for a long time. And so they have high expectations, high demands. They support the team, but they can be pretty hard on them as well. And the reason they're hard on them is because they have 5 national championships.
And we all live in whatever era that the fan grew right. up in, right? I mean, that's the era that sticks out the most. So if you were like the UU, I mean, when the documentary 30 for 30 came out and people were reminded of the excellence that was Miami. I mean, it's the color scheme, it's the cane mascot, it's the U, like the actual logo of the U, all of it. It's just, it's fascinating to me. And I'm somebody who's just enthralled that I love the city of Miami. So I always wanted to know, you know, if I could get to a game. But I saw it in the parking lot at the Glass Bowl in Toledo, right. Ohio, that people were juiced about Hurricane football. And I just absolutely love that. When you look at the defense,
you know, I would just say real fast, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that one of the polarizing arguments here is, do you continue to slug it out to recruit local players, or do you use that U brand that's so popular around the country? And, you know, Florida is Miami's arch rival. And I always felt that if you took Miami and Florida, and Florida's had more success recently, but Miami is still the more popular team, I think. And the reason is what you just said. Miami's been everywhere. They went to App State. They went to Toledo. They went to Ann Arbor. They went to East Lansing. They went to Seattle. They went to South Bend. Florida has always been a geographic team, and they're going to start expanding because they have to. But when it comes down to the brand, that you, the orange and green, the color scheme, Miami is probably the most popular team in the state. But in order to maintain it, they got to find a way to win more games.
And college football fans, I think, all around the country would love to see the U come to town. It's like a mythological sort of thing that they kind of, it's an aura around the program there. When they host Michigan State 12 noon tomorrow on Saturday, it's what is the key for Miami? You mentioned, you know, some big plays, some explosive plays, but Michigan State's look really good. And they got a kid by the name of Kenneth Walker III who has in game number one ran all up and down all over the city of Chicago. They couldn't stop him. South side didn't matter, north side didn't matter, stop, get pizza, go into the end zone. Guy ran for like 260. He was an unstoppable. They put him on a little bit of a pitch count against Youngstown State, which I think is the right move because you don't want to see him get injured in an FCS sort of game. Carries the ball 7 times, gets 50 plus yards, and still scores a TD. What's Miami's answer have to be on defense to try to contain him? And have you seen anything in the first 2 weeks that would, I guess, kind of provide you maybe some comfort or some confidence in that?
Well, first, we were lucky to avoid Walker when he played at Wake Forest. I was happy about that, and then we get stuck seeing him here against Michigan State. They have to – I think there are a couple of things that Miami has to do in this game. A lot is going to be made of the heat, and the heat's going to be a factor. It is hot. It has been really smoking hot here in September. It rained here this afternoon, and there's a chance of rain on Saturday. In most places, if it rains, you know, it cools things off. In Florida, South Florida, when it rains, it makes it even worse. It makes it a sauna. So I think for Miami, it's been relatively easy so far for Michigan State in the first 2 games. They've, as you said, they've gone up and down the field. They've had explosive plays. They haven't really felt the defense. There's been very little resistance. Miami has to make Michigan State, no pun intended, feel the heat all the way around, from the fan base to the temperature to making them work on the field. So when Michigan State walks to the sidelines and those big linemen take their helmets off and walk over to the fan trying to cool them off, they look over their coaches and say, we can't go 80 yards in 13 plays. We got to find a way to score quick. So Miami's got to get them into a drop-back game. Because what Miami does best is get sacks, tackles for losses, turnovers, turnover chain comes out, crowd gets going, the heat gets turned up. That's the game that Miami has to play. They got to put Michigan State into the heat wash machine, into the heater, and make them feel the entire environment. Use their speed, get penetration. Miami's goal this year was to be better against the run. They were horrendous last year at the end of the season. I thought they were very competitive against the run against Alabama. I thought they did a good job last week against a team that majors in running the football, App State. Miami outrushed them. Miami does it by getting into the backfield. They are going to, when that ball is snapped, they are headed to the backfield. Their linebackers are undersized, but they average 9 tackles for loss. Last year, 11% of the Miami plays ended up in a tackle for loss. That's Manny Diaz's mantra on defense, is get him behind the chains. So Miami has to do that in the early downs. I know the quarterback, Peyton Thorne, has been really good. Manny Diaz has complimented him on his running. I think Miami would feel a lot better if they got him in a drop-back game.
He is Joe Zagacki. And Joe, final one here for you. This might be the most important one for all of our listeners in the East Lansing area, or if they're, you know, on the east side of the state, the west side, northern Michigan, they're going to make the trip because, you know, you don't get Miami on the schedule all the time. Give me your best recommendation for food. I'm going to tell the listeners, if you're in Miami, you got to go to Sea Spice on the Water. That would be my choice. Where would you send them to dinner, Joe?
You know, I would tell them there are 2 airports. You can fly to Miami or Fort Lauderdale. I would go to Fort Lauderdale. I live in Broward County. It's 15 minutes away from the stadium. I would go to Fort Lauderdale. I would go to Las Olas. I would go to Lauderdale by the sea. I would go to the Aruba Beach Cafe. It's right smack on the sand, looking out at the Atlantic Ocean. Or I would go to Hollywood. I would join the Broadwalk. It's you would be walking on the Broadwalk right on the Atlantic Ocean. The restaurants aren't quite as expensive. I love going to get a mahi sandwich at Nick's. Nick's right there on the Broadwalk. A mahi sandwich and a cold beer looking at the ocean is not a bad way to spend a Friday night or a Saturday night.
He is Joseph Zagacki. You got the recommendation right there. Joe, my friend, thank you so much for your time. We greatly appreciate it. For our listeners, you can find him on Twitter at Kane's Voice. Thank you again for the time today. We appreciate you.
You're welcome, and bring your sunscreen.